Good evening. I'm going to call this meeting to order, and I'm going to make a change in the schedule of weights and measures. Don Ellis is here, and rather than him wait till 7:45, Social Services agreed, and we're going to start with Don right now. So have a seat and look at the screen. Thank you. Go ahead, Don.
For next year, everything seems to be pretty much identical to this present year's budget. No new surprises, no major changes in businesses. So I'm hoping everything goes as smoothly as it has the past 10, 12 years.
You want to go to the second? Can somebody go to the second screen and the recommended budget? We'll just take a look at that. There it is. The third screen is full-time equivalents, 1.00, no change, and OTRs, all zeros. Anyone have any questions for Rick or for Don? Go ahead, Nate.
So are you like regulated by the state? Like, are there like annual reviews or something to check on what you're doing?
I have an annual report that I have to turn into the state every January.
Okay, but they don't do like audits or anything like that? Or?
The state hasn't. I did get audited, I think it was either last year or year before last, by the comptroller's office.
Oh, okay, all right. So then that happens every once in a while.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just curious.
Yep.
Thanks.
Anyone else? Go ahead, Mike.
Well, every year I ask this question. Don, are you able to handle this without having some additional assistance?
So far, I'm keeping my head above water.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, as far as the types of devices I'm getting done compared to the rest of the state, we're pretty much equal as all the rest of the counties in the state. There's a few devices, like time devices, that I'm not getting tested, like parking meters, car washes, and stuff like that, unless I'm already at the gas station where the car washes are. And the state's position on that is they're a very minimal part of weights and measures. So if we can get them done, great. If we can't, don't worry too much about them.
Anyone else?
Well, can I just finish? And if you're on vacation or if you had sick time or something like that, how are you covered?
There's nobody here to cover. I did take 2 weeks vacation this year, and that was in the tail end of August, and I'm caught back up right now.
So it's taking you 3 months to catch back up? Two and a half.
In September, yeah.
Thank you.
Last question. Go ahead, Carol.
Are there things that we used to measure that you're not able to measure or, check every year now?
No, since I started back in 96, I'm getting pretty much all the same devices done.
One last question.
Go ahead, Nick.
Is there, with a lot of, like, new technology with, like, mobile devices and tablets, all these other things, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is there, like, new technology that you would wish to have that would allow you to be more efficient and all that other stuff?
I've actually already got a new database that our
right,
own...
That was a few months ago, right? Did we...
I did a presentation at my committee meeting, and I've actually had that database since my predecessor retired. Shortly after she retired, I went to IT, asked for the database, and it's made my paperwork a whole lot quicker.
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
I'm glad you got here at before 5:30. Thank you.
Thank you.
Social Services was originally scheduled at 5:30. Tom and Patricia are here. And their budget starts on Section 4, page 343. They have no OTRs, and they have a $21 million budget. Go ahead.
Hello. So on our first slide, you'll see that we have some changes in our expenditures and our revenues. And we have a our local net local share is lower than it was in the past. So we have.
Excuse me, could we go back to that for a second? Yes. I didn't read, have a chance to read it all.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
While you're reading, I believe Kevin has sheets in front, and it looks like to me that the numbers are bigger. Are they, Kevin? I thought so. Thank you for doing that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Bigger as in size? Oh, okay.
No, on,
that too.
On the papers, Carol.
So we have increases in salaries due to contract negotiations. And we have a fringe increase that was anticipated. Next section.
Sure. This page and the next page reviews the larger increases and decreases across our administration and our program to explain or break down the approximate $480,000 year-to-year local cost decrease in our budget request. So those first two lines, as the commissioner said, reflect the gross increased expenditures for salary and fringe. The third line shows the net local cost of those two after reimbursement. All the rest of the lines are net costs after reimbursement. We have experienced from last year to this as of the current month, a 16% increase in our safety net caseload. That safety net is the New York State mandated public assistance program for persons who aren't eligible for the federal public assistance program. And that program is, as of 2 or 3 years ago, it's more heavily a local cost than a state cost. So that 16% caseload increase is costing local taxpayers about $200,000 more next year than in this year's budget.
Okay. So in the foster care and J.D. Penn's, we have assessed what that change may be accounted for, and we believe there's some coding changes that we will be making or have been made, and that accounts for that the net decrease and the net increase in the J.D. Penn. The CSE are those are placements that school districts make into institutional care, and we've seen an increase in that those placements. We don't really have any control over those placements. The school districts make those placements directly.
In the allocations of federal and state capped reimbursement streams that we have most recently received, for which correspond to the federal fiscal year that just ended in some cases and the current state fiscal year in other cases, but it's the most current information we have regarding those revenue streams. We saw in the current period increases in some allocations. We saw decreases in a couple, but the increases outweighed the decreases to the tune of $413,000. Chief among those increases were our New York, it's called the New York State Child Care Block Grant that covers daycare expenditures. That's a mix of federal and state funds. And the New York State Foster Care Block Grant that covers both the non-federal share of both foster care program and administrative costs. The next line on page three, the approximately $116,000 of net local cost savings in Medicare corresponds, if you remember way back last year, the state's methodology for distributing to local districts, counties, a share of the cost of the Medicaid program involves a three-step formula that results in the end in a weekly amount that counties have to pay. Depending on the calendar in a particular year, there are sometimes 53 payments instead of 52 payments that have to be made. In 2013, it was a 53-payment year. Because there will only be 52 payments next year, we have a little more than $100,000 decrease in our contributions. In addition, the New York State Department of Health has estimated or projected on a county-by-county basis savings in Medicaid program costs due to increased federal reimbursement for a subset of Medicaid clients, and the State Department of Health has announced it intends to credit local districts with 80% of that estimate when it is collecting those weekly shares payments from counties. Next year, according to, again, state's estimates, that change will result in an additional $470,000 in savings for Tompkins County.
Dan, go ahead. Keep going.
This is our full-time equivalents. We have just a very slight change in our staffing. And we have no OTRs.
Could you please back up one slide again for a second? Thank you.
That's good. Thanks.
Okay. I have Peter and Pam. Go ahead, Peter. And Frank.
Let's see, I just two questions. The savings in Medicaid due to the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid due to the Affordable Care Act, how can they know? It depends on how many people sign up for the Affordable Care Act, right? I mean, how can you predict what's going to happen?
In this case, the subset of Medicaid clients are persons who, in New York State, are already on Medicaid. They're already Medicaid clients.
Right.
State DOH has not shared with us the data that they used or the assumptions that they used to make their calculation, but in this case, it's not dependent upon persons who have not been participating federally subsidized medical assistance program in the past. It's a subset of current Medicaid clients.
So there'll be an enhanced reimbursement for those clients who are already on Medicaid.
But you say it doesn't depend on how many people actually sign up. Is that
right?
Okay. And the other question, I don't quite know how to phrase it, but why are there no OTRs? Aren't there things you would like to have that you could work better with? Could you explain that a little bit to me?
Well, our direction from Joe was to come in at a certain level, and that's what we decided to do. I believe that we are in good shape, but we also have a direction from the administration that we needed to hold fast.
Okay, thank you.
I have Pam.
My question is a more mundane question. On page 2, I when you were looking at under the major influences, I'm assuming the pluses were additional money that you were getting and the minuses was money that you were not getting. But down below, it sounded as if this, the major influences that you were talking about, this was additional money that you were getting.
Sorry, that wasn't clear. These are intended to reflect changes in, for the first two lines, they're increased expenditures. For all the rest of the lines, they're either increases in the net local cost or decreases in the net local cost. So a negative is a good.
A net local cost.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Sorry that wasn't labeled clearly. That's my fault.
Okay. Thanks.
Frank?
Thanks, Jim. Tom, stay with that page. The major influence is the second block. Return to 52 weekly shares, and then the one just beneath that, the anticipated Medicaid savings. Roughly, that's about $580,000 in savings. When I look at page 343, I don't know if you have our budget book there.
Yes, I do.
Okay. On page 343, section 4, the mandated Medicaid was $12,157,000 roughly for 2012. Went up to $12,678,000 for 2013, and is anticipated to go down $12,527,000. That's about roughly $75,000 decrease or so, $100,000 decrease. That's not the same number as the $500,000. Is that number spread someplace else?
Kevin, you may need to help me out. I think that the figure that you're looking at represents expenditures, and I think a decision was made to reflect that $470,000 savings as a revenue.
That's exactly right.
So it should appear down below?
Yeah.
Under local revenues, it's no. In the
as either a state or a federal. Let me get to the page.
It would be included in the among the federal revenue totals.
Yep.
The other second question, Jim, real quick. Travel and training on that same section 4, page 343. This is the consolidated budget for the whole department. Okay. Travel and training, 2011, 18.5, 2012, 13.1. This year, 80,000. Next year, 81, almost 82,000. What's created the jump?
It's an increase in, excuse me, it's an increase in that line, Frank, but it's not actually an increase in our budget. In previous years, we had up through, I think, this year. Let me just check that. Yeah. In previous years, the department has had a contract with TC3 for continuing education for department employees. In previous years, that contract had been paid out of, I believe it was out of our professional services line. And we recognized a couple of years ago that really that is a training expense, and we just moved what line it appears in.
Okay, so that accounts for the reduction of about $100,000 in the professional services.
That sounds about right, yeah.
And last one, this is, compared to the others, this is relatively small. The maintenance line, it was 7,000 one year, about 7,000 the next. This year, almost 60, and next year, 20. What does that line represent?
Historically, since the Human Services Building was built, the Department of Social Services has been given spending authority and also responsibility for the administration and maintenance of the security systems in the building. We asked last year for a large one-time increase in order to upgrade the access systems and the surveillance systems in the building. I have to be frank, I'm not certain about the $20,000 for next year. I don't know if that was an anticipated. I don't know what the components of that are. I'd have to get back to you.
Does any other department, like youth services or probation or any of the rest of them, they're not responsible for any of that maintenance line at all?
They have not historically been.
Joe, go ahead.
And we may not want them to be.
Right. We are able to claim against our expenditures, unlike probation, right, which would be 100% local cost.
So this is actually that helps.
Yes.
Recoup
yes.
Some of. Okay.
It's better to be in our budget.
Thanks.
Pat.
This is a two-part question. Has there been any impact on any of your programs as a result of the government shutdown? And has there been any discussion or thought given to what the impacts could be if the government defaults on your clients and your programs?
Right now, we are not impacted. The state, we've been talking to the state, and the state has been talking to the federal government. The way the money flows into the state and into the counties, we're okay in most of our programs for probably a month and maybe two, and some programs may be longer. So we're aware of the possibility, and we're monitoring it very closely, but it's really not something that I can pinpoint that, yes, this funding will end, and we know that's going to happen. In terms of the default, I couldn't tell you what. It's scary, but I can't tell you what's going to happen to us and to the people we serve.
Thank you. Carol.
Can you go back to the last slide, the goals and plans?
That was?
No, there was another. Okay. We've got another slide.
I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. There you go.
Can you just tell me a little bit more about the satellite offices and where they're going to be? And
so a couple of years ago, the county had a committee, got together a committee with Commissioner of Personnel and Ed Marks from Planning to bring people together to talk about flexible workplaces. And last year, I believe it started maybe 2 years ago, we completed a pilot project for working from home. And during that pilot project, some of our staff were interested in the idea of having satellite offices in jurisdictions around the county. So we started a work group, and we've been meeting to discuss what that might look like. A couple of not-for-profits in a couple of jurisdictions have come forward and said that they might have space for us to use. So our work group is looking at what would that look like? What kind of staffing would we have? What would be available to the public? Our goal is by the end of November to have a pilot in place. We have to write procedures and policy, but our goal for next year is that we would have at least three pilot satellite offices throughout the county.
So is there money in the budget to pay for rent or the cost of operating those and these other programs up there?
The places who have contacted us, at least one for sure, there is no rent. We already have laptops. Most people at the department have laptops. We already have department cell phones. We're not anticipating any cost. Part of our goal in doing these pilots is to minimize the amount of money that we would have to outlay for it. So the work group's mission is to be able to come up with a proposal that would not include any increased spending.
Okay, well, great. So so my next question was going to be if any of the things that are up there are going to cause a little bit of increased spending, are there things that you had been doing that you're cutting that we should be aware of?
No.
That you decided to, for whatever reason, aren't
again,
necessary?
The way we look at our programs and services is to, because we know we're under a tight budget in the county, we look to do things that we can enhance internally without spending more money and coming to you to ask for money. The child well-being initiative that OCFS is promoting is something that will staff will embrace, and we will have training that the state will provide, and it'll mean looking at the way we work with families and helping families addressing poverty. But it's not going to take money. It's going to take passion and working with people to make a change. The other things we're doing, working with individuals enrolling in the Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act, we are going to get state training to be able to be certified application counselors, and that's free training. The state will be training probably up to probably 10 of our staff in that. The rollout of the Child Support Fatherhood Initiative, we're working with the State Child Support Office to design a way of reaching fathers who want to reconnect with their kids and be able to pay child support.
Great. And then, if I may, just a couple of acronyms in the contracts list. Just refresh my memory. STEHP?
It's a housing, it's a HUD. It's housing money through OTDA, Office of Temporary Disability Assistance.
HPRP.
That also is housing assistance. It's a grant that we get through the Office of Temporary Disability Assistance.
Great. And then are the contracts that are listed, maybe a Joe question, the contracts that are listed here, are those all the contracts that we have, or are there others that for some reason don't get listed here?
For DSS?
Yeah.
It's whatever they provide to us. I'm assuming it's a comprehensive list. As you said more generically, the contract list never includes construction projects because they are ad hoc. They happen. It could be at any time during the year, but these should be all of the recurring contracts.
Frank.
Patricia, I really have to compliment you on the satellite offices. We started to think about those back when Scott Heyman was the administrator. Can you say if those are supposed to be full-service offices? Realizing they can't possibly do everything you do downtown, but can you give us some idea what kind of services they'll handle?
Well, I can tell you that that's what the work group is trying to assess during this pilot. We would hope that we would be able to cross-train staff so that if it was a, say, a Medicaid worker, that worker may also be able to assist applying for temporary assistance or food stamps. If it was an adult protective services worker, that person might be able to also assist people with filing an application. So our child support division is interested in having a presence in the satellite office. I would say every single division in the department has come to be part of the work group. So we just did a survey of all staff, and everyone is very interested in being part of this. So that's encouraging.
Would they, if the sign-up for the health insurance,
mm-hmm.
would they be prepared to help during 2014 with that?
Right. We talked about, the work group talked about having a laptop available that the public could use while we are staffing a satellite office, and we could provide assistance to them and guidance in going through the application.
Great. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Patricia.
Thank you.
Soil and Water, next. And John is here, the newest member of Soil and Water Administration, John Nagley, right?
Now go easy on him, Jim.
I'm sorry?
Go easy
on
him.
Oh, yeah, well, he's about the same age as my youngest son, so, you know, what else can I do?
Ad and I will be your bookends.
Welcome, John.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to present to you guys the 2014 budget for the Soil and Water District. To dive right in. The Soil and Water is looking at a $349,000 overall budget for 2014. Of that, $168,133 is coming out of the county appropriation. And we do receive $200,000, more or less, of income from other state sources. And if you're adding those two numbers together, the 200,000 and the 168, you're probably saying, well, that's more than the 349 that you say the overall budget is. But that's the 168 is a little misleading. That also includes our rent for the district, which is $36,097. we are in the process. Hopefully this will be coming to this body in the next week or so, for a resolution to move out to the county highway facilities. So that will actually be a savings of the $36,000 to the county for this body. So that's a huge benefit. It's a win-win situation for everybody involved. It's been a challenging year for the district, as most of you know, but we have had plenty of our accomplishments, too, that we should recognize. The new district manager, it does bring a little bit more stability to the district now, knowing that there is a point person. The staff is a lot more easy about the future of the direction of the district, so that's a good step forward. The grant completions and the grant closeouts, I'm happy to report that all of the funding opportunities are open back up for us to apply for the district, so that's a positive step in the right direction. We've worked to get a balanced budget. Les Travis, our interim manager, over the past few months has worked furiously to get a balanced budget with the staff and get a realistic plan of work for 2014. So we've refined our system of operations, tried to get a lot more efficient and effective for the residents of the county. We have reduced our staff by 2.5 full-time equivalents from a staff of 7 that we previously had. So that's put a lot more workload on the staff that we currently have, which is one reason we are asking for a over-target request of $15,000. That is to assist and strengthen our ag program within the county. We do a lot of work with local farmers, putting on the ground best management practices on the ground. And a lot of those grant closeouts that I had mentioned before were directly related to the ag program and just the increased workload. We're going to need that $15,000 going into the future. And I guess just as a reminder that will be still, even with the $36,000 savings, the over-target request, it will still be a savings to the county budget. Some of the goals that we're looking forward to in 2014, now that the funding streams are back open, we want to be able to complete at least 5 contracts with New York State, putting on the ground best management practices in the field. We kind of split our district between an ag and a non-ag side. So on the non-ag side, we have the hydrilla program manager, James Balshack, in our office. And we run the permitting process through our office and the grant money that flows into the county for this flows through our office. So we want to continue that, the monitoring and eradication efforts for hydrilla, and also working with our partners in the county, FLOPA, the Finger Lakes Lake Ontario Watershed Protection Alliance. We do get funding from them on a consistent basis to put water quality practices into place and monitoring and efforts. So we want to continue that. The Stormwater Coalition, we want to be able to increase and maintain our presence with them, and also the Flood Hazard Mitigation Program that you guys put $25,000 a year into every year. We want to be able to work with the planning departments and the county highways and all the other agencies in this county along with that program. And finally, the move to county highway facility.
Thank you. And I have Brian, I have Peter, I have Carol. John, let me just say before we get to the questions, all of us are very happy that you're in the position, and I think if the county ledge was giving Oscars to anyone, Les Travis would deserve one of those for the work that he did. in this whole organization, but we really appreciate what you are doing and what you're going to be doing in the future. So, Brian, Peter.
And I'll ditto that. Certainly, congratulations, especially where it comes to grant completion of the grants. That's amazing that you were able to do that that thoroughly and that quickly. And having said that, if you're asking for $15,000, which has already been recommended, that's a no-brainer. For sure, at least in my eyes. And congratulations again.
Peter.
On that same question of the over-target request, what does that mean? Money to support this could come from the $36,000 rent survey. I mean, what's happened to that $36,000?
Defer to Joe. Well,
if you approve the arrangement to have them take space at Bostwick Road Tuesday night, this budget can go down by $36,000. So what John is saying is, if you look at the $15,000 as an addition, you can look at the $36,000 savings as something that more than offsets that.
Okay, thank you.
Carol, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, thank you.
And then Pat.
Lest anybody think this is really John's first meeting, we actually welcomed him to Peak yesterday, and I'm also very supportive of your being here. Nevertheless, I have a question. Not quite understanding. So, we're going to your rent costs are going to be lowered, plus you're saving the money that from 2.5 people that you used to pay for, but you're not going to have to pay for anymore. So now I'm not getting why those things can't cover the $15,000 new ag. Program.
We're going to let Joe answer that, okay?
The district has not had a balanced budget for some time. What this says is, with an extra $15,000 and with some significant structural changes at the district, including a reduction of 2.5 people, they will, for the first time in many years, have a balanced budget. So they need $15,000 to balance their budget, even after taking into account the reduction of personnel. On the rent, they don't pay rent. We pay their rent for them. So that's really a savings to the county. It's not a part of their budget. It's a savings to the county that, again, if they move into Bostwick, we will save that money that we're now spending as rent for their space on Hanshaw.
So what about doing that as one time and then seeing if the increased grant revenue next year could build it in?
I think if we can see, it's like the structural deficit in other areas that we've looked at. They currently have, even with the bare bones budget, a structural deficit of 15. That's why we've recommended that be a $15,000 increase in target funding, not one time. Concern would be if we again get back to a situation where they're relying on one-time money, kind of the wing and the prayer budgeting, they could find themselves back in the same situation that they've taken this year to dig out of. So, again, it's a small structural. It's amazing. It's such a small structural deficit that they now have to deal with, and the $15,000 to plug that deficit seems to be a pretty reasonable thing to ask for.
Okay, Pat.
Just very quickly, I'd like to also thank all of the members, all of the staff up there at the district, helped with the closeouts of the grants and have really helped the district make the turnaround. And just want to mention that publicly.
Mike.
John, I know that you mentioned it's been a tough time, and we're trying to keep the office functioning for its purpose, and that is to serve our agricultural community out there. And I wondered, are we going to be able to do that? How are we doing with applications from farmers and other people that have our services? Are you backed up on that with this reduction in the number of FTEs? What's it look like at this point?
So with the, like we have with the five contracts, those are contracts that we have currently that are open until the end of 2014. So we have a window to complete work within the next year. on those farms. So we do have those five open contracts. We do have funding streams. The Ag and Markets is just putting out a round of funding, which we will probably apply for a project or two to dip our toes back into the grant funding. We want to be able to complete these five contracts, but we want to be able to also push forward and be able to apply for more contracts in the future. So I think this will just be a good faith effort to apply for those. And with the farmers in the community, they're, you know, we are working on relationship building and getting them into our system. We have a ag environmental management system that we implement to get these farmers into the contract system. They need to go through that, and that's a good spot to talk with the farmers, get on the ground with them, get on their farm, and build that trust and relationship with them.
Thank you.
Brian, and then Will.
Just real quickly, to Carol's point, being that it's been identified as a structural deficit, it's certainly not one time. It's a recurring expense. I got to tell you, I'm surprised that it's that low, to be honest with you. But I just don't think the one time would fit. It's certainly something that's going to be needed going out. And again, I'm really surprised and very thankful to you and to the temporary guy, your predecessor. And having said that, I kind of agree with Mike that it's equally amazing that you're willing to take down the FTEs as far as you are and keep up the same workload. I'll wish you luck.
No. Will, and then Mike.
Well, I want to wish you more than luck. Certainly, I really appreciate that you've sort of come on so strong, but what are we giving up by giving up those FTEs? What will you not be able to do that you could otherwise normally be doing?
One position was an outreach and education position that we found that we can do that internally through our ag environmental management program for the ag side. And there's on the non-ag side, there's a lot of other outreach and education efforts through like the hydrilla, local, the water week events and the farmers market that we can tap into rather than having a in-house person. We are down a clerk, which we are filling currently with a Cortland County person on a half-time basis, which Cortland County has been great partners. That's one benefit that we've had is conservation districts across the state have great working relationships with each other, and we've been able to pull resources from other counties to come over and help us with that. My position, I am going to be split on my position with the administration, also carrying over some of that to Angel Heinekel in our office, who is our stormwater person currently. And we're probably going to have some of the reductions on the non-ag side, whereas the ag side, we would like to maintain the efforts.
Thank you, Jim.
Mike.
Yeah, sorry, Jim, I forgot to ask John one thing. And you, John, you may not know this, but in the past, we've been given a statement showing the contributions of counties around here compared to what the contribution of Tompkins County is. And as I recall, we're usually lower than many of the other counties that contribute to their soil and water conservation districts. If that's available, I'd certainly like to have a copy of it.
Yeah, I haven't dived into that aspect yet, but I can.
And I understand.
Yep.
Carol, last question.
So in the past, the vast majority of your budget comes from grants and contracts that you get from other places, not from us. It if we support you through this period, where do you see getting back to, and how long that will take?
In terms of getting back to on the grants?
On the grants and contract side of what you do.
We would like to get back to applying for grants through each round that the Ag and Markets has. So they're up to round 20. And they come out almost yearly with a grant cycle. So we would like to be able to apply for at least... And it's going to be based on the needs of the community. We don't want to be just applying for a grant to apply for a grant. We want to be able to put on the ground measures.
In terms of dollars per year?
Probably right around the same for at least 2014 going on into 2015. Probably an equal level playing field of the $200,000. But there again, the hydrilla came on us like a vengeance, and we had to respond to that. So it's grants are a unique situation, and you have to kind of go with what's needed on the ground.
Thank you very much, John. Oh, Peter?
Just a quick comment from somebody who's been a bystander to this whole crisis and operation. But believe me, I could never have imagined 2 or 3 months ago that it was going to end as smoothly as this. I'm pleased to see that.
Well, we as the Solon Water District thank you for all your help through this process.
Thank you, John. Personnel. Anita and Jackie are here.
I'm Anita Fitzpatrick from the Personnel Department, Jackie Thomas, also from Personnel, and hopefully we have a short presentation. The first slide will show you that our 2013 modified budget was 804, and the recommendation after Joe reviewed our request for 2014 is an increase of 2.81%. And that represents one change, and that's in staffing. We requested a full-time personnel assistant. The county administrator's recommendation is for part of that request to be considered by the legislature, and it would change the overall staffing of the department from 6.77 to 7.27 with a half-time position. And that's the amount of the net local share for the partial funding for the personnel assistant position should it be approved. I don't know if you have this information in your packet, but the major influences on our department, both in the last few years and anticipated moving forward, include the new HR payroll system that has required... In order to complete the processes for payroll under the new payroll system, it requires the dedication of one full-time personnel staff person in addition to supplementing that with at least half of another position to input all of the payroll changes that are required for the county's payroll in addition to compliance of all the towns, villages, school districts in terms of their payroll certifications. We've increased a lot of activity with the appointing authorities in the towns, villages, and school districts because of the online application and exam process, which in many ways is an efficiency, but also required a great deal of dedicated staff time for training of all the appointing authorities to bring them up to date on the new system. And the benefits management in the Lawson system, Lawson being the new software for payroll, is far more extensive for the benefits manager's requirements to enter in all benefit information and make changes. In addition, for payroll tracking, we now have additional sort of requirements because of summer rec programs in the towns and village appointments, and all of the summer youth employment participants, and this has been true for a few years, but under the new system it continues to take dedicated time. The summer youth employees through workforce development are on the county's payroll system only for payroll processing purposes, but it requires the same activity or close to it by my staff in order to have them go on and off payroll. And there's been some increasing in the staffing in the school districts and other municipalities, which again require us to be involved in those processes. The new online application system has dramatically increased the number of applications we get. In 2010, it was 2,400, and we're now in 2013 up to over 6,300 applications. And so those coming in, I think, may have many benefits aside from the convenience to the candidate and broadening the candidate pool for the appointing authorities and the possibility of more diversity in the workforce by the increased applications. It also requires more staff time to evaluate those applications, to work with candidates who may need more assistance, to be able to complete the processes in a timely manner. So that's increased our workload. We're implementing paperless systems, and Jackie's been instrumental in setting up new electronic systems for the department, which I can't really speak to, but they're very good. And also with the online application system and the maintenance of all those things. In terms of succession planning, prior to the request this year for a staff person, I would say over the last 10 to 12 years, we've probably reduced staffing by, I could count, five people. Some of the functions have changed, some haven't. And if you look at our current staffing of under seven people, we're anticipating retirement of 75% of the staff within 5 years. And so what we'd like to do is start out in this budget with at least a part-time person to bring them in and start training them as part of a long-term succession plan, and also to pick up some legitimate work that's there if the staff was completely stable for 5 years. But the combination of the two, I think, makes it more imperative that we look at it this year. Our goals for next year. Thanks. Our goals for next year are to continue the training programs that Jackie's been overseeing with Joe's, you know, recommendations for and funding. Supervising for success for all supervisors. We had several more sessions this year. I think two group one, two level one new groups, and I think one continuation of a level two for two group ones. So anyway, we're moving along. We also had an opportunity to have a two-day leadership training with Jeff Berkovitz that was originally initiated by Barb at Solid Waste, but she was able to invite other senior management around the county to participate in that. It was well received, and we hope to be able to continue leadership training for senior management in the future. For health insurance goal, we want to continue our work with the consortium and the joint committee with both labor and management on plan design and cost containment, including wellness and other initiatives. Streamline the electronic processes where practical. Ensure that we remain in compliance with all the requirements of New York State Civil Service, not only for the county, but for all the towns, villages, school districts, TC3, BOCES, and to work in conjunction with county administration and Paula's efforts with WDIC on diversity and outreach to expand our outreach with school districts in TC3. That was a recommendation of the CEPA study from Cornell in 2009. And collaborate and have partnerships with other municipalities more effectively and work to coordinate the county's presence at community activities and job fairs, work with the department heads to make sure that those kinds of events are covered, not necessarily by the same people every time, but by representatives of the overall county service community. So
That's it. Okay, questions? Peter Stein?
So that half an FTE, is that considered by you to be sort of a transitional way of refilling those positions that you expect to be vacated, or is that something independent of that?
No, it's part of the plan. It's not the sole plan. We need the assistance of additional staff person, in my opinion, based on the level of work. We've taken on a number of programs the last few years without increasing staff, the workplace violence prevention program, all the workplace violence prevention assessments that have to be done annually in every department, more health and safety activities, more compliance issues, plus the staffing changes we fully anticipate to occur. We need to start and build the training capacity of new staff over a period of time.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kevin, you said the Senate Council did not come in. Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit. Now, and we have, it's Rick Andrasik and Alice Eggleston, am I correct? Come right to the end of the table there and sign in, please. Remember, what's my line?
The microphone can stay about 6 to 8 inches away from you.
Thank you. No, we're not on.
One of the handouts I gave to everyone this evening includes a revised capital and operating budget for TCAT.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Yes, I believe it's the last piece of the, not the PowerPoint presentations I handed out, but in the last page of the other handouts, there's a revised capital and capital and operating budget for TCAT. Two-sided.
Yeah. It looks like this. It says proposed draft 2014 capital plan.
Oh, it's a horizontal piece.
Yes.
It's a spreadsheet.
Take it away, Rick.
Okay, those two sheets that Kevin was speaking about from the July 31st budget presentation, I don't know how many people were there, we changed.
Rick, excuse me, you have to talk right into the top of that mic, right in the front of the mic.
But about 8 or 10 inches away.
Okay. On your left foot.
While you're hopping up and down.
I wish Joe was here. Okay. So those two revised sheets, at the time of the July 31st presentation, we didn't know about the mortgage recording tax for sure. So these two sheets here have the revision for that, $680,000 increase in our budget. So what we did, we took the original July 31st operating budget, had a deficit of $307,000. We're projecting that we would use $245,000 of the $680,000 mortgage recording tax for operating to bring our deficit down to $62,186. And then we would use $435,000 of the $680,000 estimated mortgage recording tax in our capital plan. That would reduce our request from the original $255,000 per partner to $110,000 per partner. So adding those two together, the $829,000 operating that we're requesting and the $110,000 capital will bring it back into line of last year's $940,000 total.
Jim, that's what's in the recommended budget as well.
Right. Right.
That's the biggest changes from July.
Questions? Anyone have any questions for Rick? Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
We asked them all at their nice presentation.
Yeah, oh, right.
Joe just wanted to make sure I thanked everybody for all your work on the mortgage recording tax.
Yeah, that was big. So. Good enough. Thank you very much.
Wait.
What, Carol?
Okay, I have a question about the impact of the town reduction, how you're making it up, and...
What reduction?
It hasn't been decided yet. Carol?
It has not been decided.
It's an open question at the moment.
Okay.
So we won't weigh in on that. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Dwight Mengel, and I believe you are here for transportation planning. Am I correct?
Yes, you are.
All right. You all have that? It's a...
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, ready?
We are.
Okay, great.
Rock on.
From the Department of Social Services, transportation planning does the federal and state grant management for all the public transit programs and also does mobility management. And the budget is, in terms of the bottom line, virtually the same as last year. The reflected increase in expenditures and revenues is really reassessing the timing that we expect to receive grants from the state. The state's taking longer than prior years with awarding grants, and so a grant that we anticipated to receive in 2013 will very likely be awarded in early 2014. Our environment is very much regulated by the federal transportation law. The present law was adopted in 2012. It's being implemented this year. And we've had to make a number of changes in terms of how we administer the federal program locally. We take advantage of all opportunities from at the state level for funding. But frankly, what we find, and it may not just be our experience, but the state is taking a longer and longer and longer time to award grants. What we did complete through the Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council this year is a 7-county mobility plan. It's Tompkins and the 6 counties surrounding us, and so, or our neighboring 6 counties. And we've really adopted a regional perspective, which is a bit easier for us because about 25% of our workforce commutes every day from outside of the county. And then the other thing is that we have a a really successful network of mobility services and partners. And we found very effective ways of working together to inform the public about all of the very diverse services that we have here. And I believe we've been very successful doing that. The full-time equivalent is me, and we're not asking for any more money.
Questions? Well?
Right. So you listed the partners, for example, 211. Are these connected financially, or just people you could talk with and sort of work together?
We have contracts, sometimes very small contracts, with seven of the eight partners shown, and we so with 211, they receive some funding through the Way2Go program. They also provide the call taking for the FISH volunteer driver service, and so through both of those avenues, there's funding to support their services.
Thank you. Michael.
Dwight, I see one of the partners you've mentioned is Ithaca Dispatch, and I know there are other taxi companies out there and limousine companies. Do you coordinate in this transportation planning with the taxi providers in some way? Is this something that we get at a reduced rate for any of our people who need it? What do we do with about taxis? I ask that because the taxis seem to be on the top of the scope lately.
Okay, taxis. First, with our working with Ithaca Dispatch has been effective because, as you recall, last fall we unveiled the MV1 taxi, the wheelchair accessible taxi, and Ithaca Dispatch provided 20% of the funding for that. So they basically provided the local match to enable us for the county to purchase the taxi, and that was voluntarily on their part and very, very useful. I have talked with most, but maybe not the newest taxi services, and we there's a pretty wide diversity of opinion about the state of the taxi business. And there is a sense that we do need to do something different because the jurisdictions which are exercising regulation over the taxis are really quite small in terms of their geographical boundaries to effectively regulate services. So, I mean, that has come up again and again, and I do know that there's interest on the part of the city to take a fresh look at taxis. Many years ago, I was a consultant to the city relating to rewriting their taxi ordinance. And so it's something that I'm familiar with the issues there.
Thanks.
Peter.
I'm not sure this is, I'm pretty sure this is not the right place to raise this, but I'm surprised. I've never heard of this organism, this part of the county business, and I wonder what committee does it report to?
Peak.
Yeah, right. Planning?
Okay.
Remember a few weeks ago, I think I brought you information about a program formerly known as JARC and mobility. We've had some...
Okay, I think probably is not the right place to talk about this. Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you, Dwight.
Okay, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have the library scheduled at 7:15, and they are not here, so you may talk among yourselves. Everyone else, assigned counsel will not be here because of illness, and everyone else is done. The library is here, and they are ready, willing, and able to go. They are in section 5, page 89.
Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I tend to get too close to the microphone. I do have some other trustees who will be coming tonight, so they may come in a little late. I was worried as I was walking up. I could see the slide, and I thought, I was sure it was at 7:15. But it sounds like you're ahead of schedule, which is nice for you.
We had a couple changes, and it went fairly smoothly at the beginning.
Great. I mean, you deserve an early evening for once. Well, first I'd like to extend my heartfelt thanks and my appreciation on behalf of all of us at the library for the opportunity to talk with you tonight. And I really appreciate your exhaustive work. I see your schedule every year during budget season. And I would like to also extend a special word of thanks to everyone who served on the Library Budget Working Group, and to the entire legislature for the discussion and adoption of the Working Group report. So in addition to presenting our budget request tonight, I'd like to take a few minutes to demonstrate the value of the library to the community and to talk a little bit about what county funding provides. So our library is a core community service. It's a community anchor, and it's an important economic tool. Residents and employers consider the quality of our library in making location decisions. I don't know if you saw back in the summer that Ithaca was rated the number one smartest city by Luminosity. I like to think that our library had some contribution toward that, from quality of life. This library serves people at every age and every stage of their lives. We provide free and open access to reading, knowledge, technology, and information. And one of the most difficult tasks I have every year is deciding which of the many core services we offer that I should share with you, whether it's supporting reading, supporting the digital divide, collaborations with other organizations, civic, cultural programming, and educational programming. The photos here include ones from our very popular English as a Second Language program. This is through a collaboration with TST BOCES and Tompkins Learning Partners. The other is a reception that we hosted last month for all of the county school librarians. We had a big turnout for that. One is from a special story time for kindergartners, and one is from a teen financial literacy program we offered in collaboration with Alternatives Federal Credit Union. Over the past 4 years, we've collaborated with more than 120 local educational institutions, organizations, and businesses to bring the community educational, cultural, and civic programs. I've been a librarian a long time. I am continually asked about the future of libraries in the digital age. One of the most important things we do is help the community harness the sheer overabundance of information. Since the internet began 20 years ago, and especially in the last 4 years, due to the rapid changes in book publishing, we have become facilitators for helping our community sort through the overwhelming amount of information. We will continue
and we have been for some time, to address the issue of the information haves and have-nots. Not everyone is online yet, and it's essential that we not assume everyone has a computer at home. One of the things we help people with every day is digital literacy, and that is a growing need. This is helping people to maneuver through a non-linear hypertext environment that can be disorganized. Libraries are trusted authorities for evaluating information and helping people assess the accuracy and the sourcing. We're known for protection of patron privacy, and this is a great value we bring to our community. The FCC Commission reports that roughly 1 in 3 Americans still have not adopted broadband at home, and nearly 66 million have no technology or internet skills. And this matters these days economically. Our library serves people daily who need help setting up email accounts, using the internet on smartphones, devices, tablets, asking help with job applications, even if the job doesn't require any computer skills. We help people set up their online banking accounts, and we help people with health resources. Just this past month, we've had a considerable amount of training of our librarians to deal with the new Affordable Care Act. And we did have Betty Falco came to give a presentation and is working with the librarians to help people know where to find resources. And we'll be working with some of the navigators at the library as people come in to ask for help. So you may not remember Saturday, February 9th of this year, but I remember it because it looked like this winter storm here. It was one of the iciest, snowiest Saturday mornings we've had. And downtown, practically everything was closed. But the library opened. We had 10 staff who showed up, and 5 of them are pictured here. All but one of them traveled from outside of Ithaca, and the young woman at the top traveled from Syracuse to be at the library. We opened only 30 minutes late, and by 11:30 a.m. we had 70 people in the building. So the library is really there when people need it. And we had people telling us that they were very happy we were open. The library continues to be very heavily used. In 2012 alone, there were over 1.4 million online connections, and this is to the library website, the online catalog. It's using the downloadable books, full-text resources, and includes wireless connections. In addition, more than 915,000 items from the collections were used. That's physical use. And we had last year nearly 42,000 registered borrowers. This year we're at 40,000 registered borrowers, but we're not to the end of the year yet. This includes residents in the Finger Lakes Library System, and this includes all of the Tompkins County libraries as well. And we supplied the Tompkins County libraries over 500,000 items from our collections going out to their libraries. More than 412 visits were made to the library, and over the last 3 years, nearly 1.3 million people have visited the library. It's one of the busiest buildings downtown. Over the last 3 years, there have been double-digit percentage increases in programming, and we provided 5 FTE worth of volunteer experience to our community. And that is something I like to thank the legislature for every time I come, because just before I started at the library, the legislature approved a full-time volunteer coordinator. And so we've really gotten a good return on investment from that position. So the numbers here represent a very busy library, but it's the quality of the engaging learning experience that people have at the library and our role as a community and downtown anchor that makes us so outstanding. Excuse me a minute. So this is our recommended budget for 2014. We so appreciate the recommendation for an increase. Just to roughly outline our budget, Tompkins County provides roughly 75% of our operating revenue. In addition to the county appropriations, we receive funding from the City of Ithaca through sales tax, the Town of Ithaca, which we use for Sundays, New York State funds through the Finger Lakes Library System,
the Friends of the Library, and the Foundation. And we also work with the Foundation for grants. There are a few miscellaneous fees in the library through our partnership with the Discovery Trail, that kind of thing. Some of the supplemental revenue is restricted, and some of it is used for general operating aid. The fund balance is any savings we've had from the previous year. Since I've been there, this is my fourth year, it's been all due to staff vacancies and saving the funds from that. And it is what we've been using during the economic downturn to balance our budget. I always like to take this opportunity to thank the county for the support of the library facility. It's a very busy building, as you can imagine, 1.3 million people over the last 3 years. And the facilities crew takes very good care of us. And with double-digit programming, they've had to do a lot in the Borg Warner Room. Some of this you know from the library working group report, but again, just to reiterate, the last 4 years have been extremely difficult because in order to keep our budget balanced, we reduced staffing by 15%. We've been unable to replace needed positions when they become vacant, but we're at a point where that's no longer an option. We just cannot go lower than the current staffing level. There is a direct correlation between the number of staff and the number of people served. For example, for the first time in a number of years, we have better coverage at the Youth Services Reference Desk, and we've seen a 70% increase in the number of reference questions asked and answered. Last year, we didn't have enough staff to cover it at all times. We often had to post a sign. So that's the good news, but this year we have a similar problem in our main reference desk, and we're being challenged to keep up with what the community requires of us. Our utilization does continue to be happy, to be heavy and happy. I'm happy when the library's used. But one of the things I really like to emphasize is that in libraries, staff equals services. They're essential for a good library. We have seen a reduction in the collection acquisitions budget. We're very grateful for the Friends of the Library and the Foundation for the collection budget. There is restrictions on how the collection budget can be used. But you see that the collection budget has gone down. We added only 15,000 items last year. That's 9% less than the year before. One of the most important aspects of a library, and one that is most often recognized, in fact, it's a library brand, is the collection, the books. But I think what most people don't understand is how you come to have such a great collection. And it's having a well-trained staff, such as we have at the library, which includes the librarians for the selection of the materials, and the staff who acquire, catalog, shelve, and circulate the materials. So I'll give you some perspective on this. There are about 350,000 to 400,000 new book titles every year published. That's new titles. That's not all of the titles that are still in print, which people might request. So if you imagine that you have to choose what books, what materials the library is going to have based on what your community wants, you can see the challenge there when you have a reduced budget. So clearly we can't buy that many books per year. So the librarians have to absolutely be in tune with the community and what they want. And I think this is one of our great strengths. We have an amazing collection at our library. Not quite as much as it should be, but it's been throughout the years really well developed. So one of the things that happens is when you have less money and fewer staff is that the selection parameters become more challenging, not less. This is our 2014 over target request, and we appreciate the recommendation. As noted in the report from the Library Budget Working Group and other presentations, our budget is expected to jump by another $200,000 And that's largely as a result of the higher health and pension costs that everybody's experiencing. So when that $200,000 increase in costs is added to the pre-existing gap between expenses and revenues, our structural deficit, and again, this is outlined in the working group report, will exceed $400,000. We are using funds from our unrestricted fund balance to help defray some of the deficit, and we're asking for this over-target request from the county. This is not for anything extra. This is needed to maintain our current operations. I will note that unlike other county departments, our target budget doesn't include any normal cost of living increases or those benefit or retirement costs that are beyond our control. We're an outside agency, and we must request these funds using the over-target request. This is one of my favorite slides to talk about because every year we figure what is the return on the investment. And the county's return on the investment is significant. Each year we actually sit down and figure out how much have we saved our community by their using the library. And we actually have a library value calculator that people can use on the library website. We update it each year. We look at the actual costs of all that we offer. And we use our annual statistics to calculate the savings. So, for example, when we calculate the savings on the use of just books and magazines, all types of books, children, adult, young adult, and the interlibrary loan, we save our community more than $10 million. For audiovisual materials, DVDs, music CDs, audiobooks, the savings is more than $6 million. Technology, this is internet sessions, Microsoft Office, early computer learning for childhood literacy, digital downloads, audiobooks, Nook and Kindle devices. And these are for people who are unable to purchase computers, internet access, or even think about having downloadable ebooks. We save our community more than $2 million. The study rooms are heavily used, and if we had something like 9,972 hours of the study rooms, it's not the BorgWarner room, this is the study rooms, this is a savings of just under $300,000. So a library, I believe that our working with the county, we're a wonderful cooperative purchasing arrangement. So for every dollar that we receive, we provide $7.56 worth of service. And in these days of supporting sustainability, the library, all public libraries, are one of the original organizations supporting sustainable initiatives. We buy something once, and thousands of people use it. So we need your support, and I have appreciated the work of this group so much this year. We want to continue to provide the library our community clearly expects, and that clearly helps to bring our community so much recognition. So thank you very much for all the work that you do. Thank you for considering our requests, and thank you for all the hours that you put in. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
I have Brian, then myself, and whoever, and Mike. And go ahead, Brian.
Thanks, Jim. As I often do, I sit here and try to figure out what's going on in the mind of the county administrator as we're going through this. It's my way of entertaining myself, I guess. Jumping to the OTR, and I'll try to phrase this in the form of a question, Joe, but target is, first off, I appreciate everything that was done with the structural deficit committee and so on and so forth. I have read that report coming back, and although the grand total of the request doesn't even meet the identified deficit, I understand that. You have $175,000 in target, which I'm assuming we're hoping that throughout 2014 goes towards bridging that structural deficit. And the one time of 140, is it the hope that that will be taken up with operational changes and or future fundraising, that sort of stuff, or
no? You haven't gotten fully into my mind yet. You're halfway there.
Yeah, but you can't stop me from trying. it's fun.
No. The structural deficit, as Sue has explained, is around $400,000. So the first chunk of that has been addressed for the near term by the library itself dedicating some of its own reserves to help plug that gap. That's not sustainable. But in terms of 2014, the 400 went down to 315, basically by them applying the little bit of money they still have left in the bank, leaving 315 unfunded. We looked at this based on the work group report as really the county has to step up and close this gap. And we have two ways to pay for filling that gap. One is through recurring property tax support. The other, if we don't have enough money there, we have to take it out of our bank, our reserves. So our support is really expressed as a sum of those two things. So 175 of our contribution is target money. It'll be raised through property taxes. It's a part of the 3.5% levy increase. Mm-hmm. So that will be there for the long haul. It's recurring revenue. But we didn't think we had the capacity, and the work group recommended this approach as well, to get all the way there with recurring money in 1 year. So what we couldn't cover with target, we're covering in 2014 with reserves, taking money out of the bank, and that's the 140. Come next year, if the work group's recommendations are followed, the goal would be to increase the amount of recurring support we give and decrease the amount we have to take out of the bank. In the third year, a little more target, a little less out of the bank. So it was kind of a glide path into a higher property tax contribution to the library.
So all things being equal, at some point, target money, property taxes, are at some point going to reach that $400,000 level.
Well, that's the goal. That's the goal, although the challenge, as everyone knows, it's a moving target. So what's $400,000 today because of salary increases, benefit increases, whatever, is not 400 tomorrow, it's more than 400. So it's a moving target that we're chasing. Mm-hmm. I think in the work group report, we've acknowledged that this incremental progress it's critical, it's essential, but it may not be sustainable. So we might be able to get close to being able to support the library as it is today. Maybe. Even that's a stretch. But certainly we can't get them beyond where they are today. And I think as you listen to Susan and her board members, they'd like to have more at that library than they can currently afford to do. So it's kind of a long story trying to get into a compressed response, but we're trying to get our funding up to a level that sustains them, at least the status quo. But as you can see in this one jump of $175,000, that's a pretty significant element of our property tax increase that we will try to keep building year after year, but it's going to be pretty difficult for us to do. So we've recognized that the work needs to go on, that the work group started, that there needs to be a really focused effort on what is next? What is a better revenue model, a more sustainable revenue model that can carry them into the future? And that was really the closing recommendation of the work group report. Let's pull together another group and look to the long-term revenue structure.
So part of what we're supposed to be doing here is to educate ourselves and educate the public. Just on target, which is taxes, $175,000 is, help me out here, four-tenths of a percent?
Pretty close. It's 438 for 1%.
Yeah. Do you have an Excel up? You're pretty close. Yeah, half would be $220,000, 215, something like that. So, yeah, your four-tenths is pretty close. We'll get it for you.
Okay.
All right. Susan, my question is maybe two-part. Do you have money in your budget for security? And is it sufficient to deal with the concerns that many of us hear about?
The security, we outsource our security. When I first started, there was one security guard for part-time. Last year, no, we're going to be over budget for security. That, and to answer your question, we are concerned about this. We saw late in 2011 some impact from the change in the smoking ban. In 2012, late in the summer, that impact ramped up, and we hired a second security guard. So we have one security guard at all times the library is open, and a second security guard comes on at 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. We had made a decision to budget for the two security guards from August through October, but this year the security concerns have ramped up even more and have become quite a challenge for the library, for that entire section of the neighborhood. I hired two security guards starting in March, and we began to reach out to community groups, organized a meeting in March. We had a great meeting. We've had a series of meetings. But it is a real challenge because it is a complicated issue. You have the smokers. You have people who want to hang out, who maybe don't have anywhere to go. And then there's a real criminal element. And we have worked very closely with the Ithaca police to have them come and spend time in the library to try to help us sweep through and get that criminal element out. It is continuing. And just last week, on September 27th, I think it was a Monday, there was a meeting that was held in the neighborhood by the businesses on West State Street, and the library was invited. They wanted to talk about the issues on Cougar Street and West State Street, but I also brought up the issues on Green Street. And there was quite a bit of concern from everyone in that area in terms of the criminal elements they were seeing. We see it from early morning till the library closes and afterwards. We see it in the library. And I am concerned. I hear constantly from patrons who are fearful of these groups. They're large groups. They can be very aggressive. But I don't think it is as simple, it's all criminal or not criminal. It's a complicated issue, and it needs some work. And we have reached out to the city to volunteer the library to serve as a resource and a meeting place to help with this. But my concern right now is some members of the Board of Trustees are here, and as well as the Friends of the Library and the staff. One of the things we did was look at the budget for security. I had to make a decision about the budget because and when to stop the second security guard. And we're going to stop having a second security guard November 1st. And even at that point, we'll be $4,000 over the planned security budget. If we keep the second security guard, we'll be over by $15,000. However, I will have to make some kind of decision because if we continue to have these issues, I will have to bring back a second security guard for the safety and security of the staff and the patrons using the library. That's a longer answer, but it's obviously you can see it's a great concern.
It's exactly what I wanted to hear. Thank you. All right. I have Mike, Peter, and Frank.
Jim, thanks for asking that question. Susan, thanks for your covering that. That's on a lot of our minds now. I hear your board talk about this frequently at your meetings. But following up on your comments, Joe, and you use the word sustainable. I'm beginning to hate that word because it's used everywhere. Yeah. But it does say in this context that we may not be able to fund the level of service that we would like to at the library in the future. And this is a big stretch for us this year. And I'm wondering if we can't do that, and if there isn't some other stream of revenue, for example, are we going to have to ask the library to cut back even further?
Well, if there's no other choice, I mean, we talk about what are the other sources of support. You were on the work group. You know, we looked at the philanthropic support the library currently gets. It's extraordinary. So it's hard to go to the community and say, give us more money when they already. I got to figure this is the most generous local support for a library in New York State. So that source is really tapped out. You know, the state sets all the rules. It tells us how many hours we have to be open. It does all those other things. The amount of money we get from state aid, that Susan gets from state aid, is actually very small. And to think that the state is going to increase its support in the multiples is unreasonable. That's not going to happen. So when you get beyond that, it leaves us. And if we don't have the capacity to increase our funding for the library, you know, in government, there are two things you do. You either raise taxes or you cut spending. So to your point, if we don't have the capacity to raise our support over time, then the only option available would seem to be, absent some other revenue source, cutting spending, reducing what the library does. And that's the only other option that would be available. Hopefully there is a revenue structure out there. Maybe there's for a lot of groups this year, we looked at different revenue models. TCAD, we looked at a different revenue model. TCAD, we looked at a different revenue model. Maybe there are other revenue models out there that need to be explored, and that's kind of where we hope this next iteration of study will go.
I just think that that's very important, and thanks for making that point, because other libraries in other areas, not very far from us, Broome County, for example, and Erie, have really gone after their libraries with the MEAT Act since 2008. I hope we don't have to do that.
Peter Stein, then Frank, then Carol.
Couple of things. I would have thought that outside the library, the security problems are those of the city of Ithaca, and inside the doors, they're the libraries.
The sidewalk outside the library is considered county.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Actually, it even gets more complicated. There is a certain amount from the curb to about halfway of the sidewalk that is the city, and then the rest of it is the county. But if there's a crime being committed, the police come and deal with it.
Yeah, I was just sitting here thinking these bad folks that come into the library and you want them to leave, how come they don't go into that store, Urban Outfitters? Why don't they hang out there? How do they keep people out? Do they have security people inside?
No, but one of the things to think about is that a library is a place where people know they can come and be safe. And I think this is where I think the problem is complicated, because there is a criminal element which needs to be dealt with. But then there is a significant percentage of those people who come in for their day reporting, and they have nowhere else to go. And I believe if we could take care of the criminal element, then there might be some outreach and education for those that need some additional help and support. We have worked with Bridges for Youth, who have come over and actually walked around outside to work with the youth, and we've been talking with mental health about how they can come. And one of the meetings I had was actually to say, if you're offering workshops, come to the library, because your clientele is outside. We can work with you and have a room and do some things. So I think it seems simplistic to just move people, but it's a more complicated issue, and it's where I see Ithaca changing. But I know that for the businesses along South Cayuga and West State Street, they're very upset about it. And they see these people all the time as well. We had just yesterday, so they wait for the bus right there. And just yesterday, the guards had to call the police because a couple of the people were trying to kick in the doors, the emergency doors to the Borg-Warner room. So, you know, so we have a very good, I mean, one of the things that the police have told us is that the library has one of the best procedures for dealing with this. We have a very clear procedure with people are considered persona non grata, and if they come back, we press charges. So, you know, we have worked really closely with the district attorney and the police on this. But I am concerned about the people who, we had a readathon recently. It was great. It was 18 hours, 40 readers. Some of the people who are less fortunate, who weren't criminal, sat there the entire 18 hours, they're homeless, and they were read to, and it was great. And they really enjoyed it, and they actually came in, one of them came in and got a library card and checked out some books. So, I mean, you've got a lot of things going on here, and I think there's a lot of work that's needed. But it did start with the smoking ban, and so we have been handed this problem, and I think it's a much bigger issue for the community.
I had another couple of questions that are more mundane. You talked about your increasing pension costs. Are you in the New York State pension system?
They're in the New York State retirement system.
Oh, mm-hmm. Well, then I thought that those pension costs were reduced for next year rather than increased.
Right. Well, one of the things I said is that Joe, you look like you were going to respond.
Yeah, I can. And you're right, they've stabilized for 2014.
Yeah.
One of the things that has really upset the balance over the past 4 years is that escalation of costs. A very quick primer on how we do budgets. For a departmental budget, when we cut, first we do a kind of a maintenance of effort budget. And we say, let's build in the uncontrollable costs to see where their budgets would be if we just kept a status quo. So we begin by looking at negotiated salary growth, fringe benefit increases, and so forth. So we build those budgets up, and then we see how much we have to cut to be able to meet our budget targets. That's what we do for our departments. For our agencies, we don't. So if we tell a department, you have to cut 5% next year to meet our budget targets, we build them up, and then we cut 5% from that higher amount. For our agencies, the library, we say simply cut 5%. So if they're in the state pension plan, they're dealing with those same cost pressures on the fringe side that we are, but they're being treated, I'd say, more harshly because of the way we approach it. We just say cut 5% from your total local support. So that's what Susan was talking about. It's difficult for them to deal with.
But her pension costs haven't increased, right? Because this year...
For 2014? No. Between 2009 and 2014, just like ours, they went through the roof.
They went through the roof. Okay. So just one more quick question. I wondered about when you do your acquisitions, do you check to see whether... at the usage of the new acquisitions that you bought to sort of compare what you think people wanted to read to what they do want to read or something like that?
This is, libraries have this down to a science. And one of the things libraries do really well is track usage. And then it's interesting, in a public library as opposed to an academic library, collects for the ages for research. A public library is a steady state library. So there are well-established procedures for constantly tracking usage and for turnover of materials so that you meet the needs of the community. Our librarians spend a lot of time on that.
Okay, thank you.
Frank.
Thanks, Jim. Susan, it sounds like you got a challenge or two. state funding. I thought Joe was going to hit this a little more, a little deeper. Can you remind us, there's always been a discussion about how many hours you have to stay open in order to meet, receive whatever funding you're going to get from the state, or what you're entitled to receive from the state, and then how much you actually do receive, and what days of the week are you open, and what hours?
So there are a couple of mandates for us because we serve as the central library for the Finger Lakes Library System. And what that means is, as the central library, we would be similar to, we're the main research and reference library. So we have the largest nonfiction collection and largest reference collection. So as the central library for the system, we can never go below 55 hours per week. So that's a central library requirement. And we meet that, and we won't go below that. Then there is a requirement as a municipal public library based on the population served that has nothing to do with the system. And we are a library that's chartered to serve the entire county. And based on the current population, we are mandated to be open 60 hours a week. We are currently open 55 hours all year round, but there are 22 weeks in the year where we are open 59 hours because we have Sunday hours. So we have to have a meeting with the head of the Finger Lakes Library System to talk about a variance or a waiver for the 60 hours because we didn't make that this year or last year. So we'll talk about that.
Well, follow up, Jim. You said you're hitting the 55 hours a week to meet the obligation for the to be the central library.
Right.
Does that entitle you to receive how much of a state reimbursement?
I don't have that number. There is a mandated amount that we receive from the state, and I can get that for you. I can send it to you. It is written into education law. We haven't gotten it for quite a while.
Good. Yeah. That's where I'm going.
We get it late every year. I think we just got a payment last week, but it's not the full amount. So I can get the state amounts and bring to you, send to you. I'll send them to you. I sent them to Kathy, and you can share.
Can you distribute?
I've got the 2013 number in terms of state aid.
Okay.
On a $3.5 million budget, the state contributed 3% of that, or $109,000. Mm-hmm. That's what's in the budget.
Right.
And is that what you're entitled to, or is that what they reimbursed? Does that percentage meet? Is that all you're entitled?
I think 109 is. There are a couple of different avenues. State aid. I don't think that's all that we're entitled to, and I don't have that number in front of me, but it is mandated by state education law. I know that systems have not been receiving. One of the things that happened during the recession is the systems themselves were cut so that the aid to the central library was cut. So we have been cut over the last 4 years in state aid. So I'll need to go back and check to find out if the 109 is a mandated amount or if it's what we actually got. I'm looking to see if Rosie has it, but you don't know. Okay, we'll check. We'll get that number for you.
Okay.
The bottom line is we have not received the full amount of state aid every year that we should get because the state has cut the systems.
Carol.
I don't know that that is tied to the hours, it's tied to, but I do know that as the central library, the mandate is that we are not supposed to ever go below 55 hours. If we do, bad things start to happen. You start to lose your central library status, and it goes into all kinds of things. And I know that it cannot include, for example, in Rochester, the central library went below 55 hours, and they were dinged by the state and had to come back up. So we're good with 55 hours. It's the 60 hours. It's that additional 5 hours all year round. The 59 hours, the 22 weeks when we're open 59 hours, it doesn't count because it's not all year round. So, you know, as I said, I'm going to be meeting with the head of the system to talk about hours.
Can you give us, when you or Rosie check the numbers, how far back do your records show you have not received the allocation you were entitled to from the state?
Okay.
That would be...
So state aid over last 5 years?
Well, yes, that'd be good. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Go ahead, Carol, sorry.
Yeah, five is getting short to go back before the loop. I don't know if you're going to have an answer for this, but do you have a sense of what percentage of your activity would fit into the category, rough percent, that would fit into the category of the kinds of things, that you pay for it in educating people, in giving them access who otherwise don't have access, or you pay for it later when you have bad effects in society? Serving people who don't have access anywhere else to internet,
holding programs there, the tutoring programs, the some of the things that you mentioned where classes are held there. Mm-hmm. What percentage that if we don't do, you know, then we have more people who are falling off the grid and into trouble relating to the problems you're describing?
I'm not sure I understand, but if you're wondering if we can quantify I can quantify the return on investment based on our use statistics in terms of the savings to the community, but I think what I think I hear you asking is there a way for us to quantify an impact on the educational system and what happens don't provide? The one thing I will say is that one thing for sure is that what I've seen over these 4 years is that when other services are cut, and maybe the client, they see as many clients as the money sees. The library's open 55 hours a week, 59, 22 weeks of the year. And no matter what else is happening, they come to the library. So the library, and libraries have always served this social service aspect in our communities. I think it's more visible now with technology and the technology needs. So public libraries were founded on the notion of being the people's university so that everybody would have an equal opportunity to those resources, and that's what we see happening. So is there a way to quantify that? There probably is some qualitative statistical measure that you could do. I would have to think about how to do that. I do know that I see the impact of the library every day.
Right. Yeah, no, I... You know, our format calls for asking questions instead of making statements, mm-hmm. but I was looking for a way to ask, to turn... I'm scared of the tendency to say maybe we just can't afford to do that anymore that Mike was bringing up, and I was looking for a way for us to justify to our constituents, look, either we pay for it by providing things like a library or we pay for it later at much higher costs,
yes,
to provide services that are much more expensive. So that's what's where it's going.
Yeah.
I have another, so just another thing about sort of thinking out of the box. I didn't realize the extent of the security problems that you were facing, and as you started to launch into it, I'm thinking this flip answer, you know, so we've got Brian sitting across the street along with his city colleagues, checking pocketbooks, and then this is a county space, and I'm just wondering, and as I'm realizing this is a more serious problem than a flip answer, are there ways to think out of the box with a intermunicipal joint city-county approach where we've got some responsibility as a county for security in what's one of our highest concentration locations in the county, that we maybe have some responsibility for security, and then the city's got people sitting right across the street. And I don't know what it would be here, and we're not going to figure out the answer here, but whether we can... So, Joe, any thoughts or Susan?
Hold on before Joe answers. Would you come to a microphone, please?
This one?
Sure. Yes.
My name is Aloja. I'm the president of the Board of Trustees of the library. But I also work downtown, and I can talk a little bit more, and maybe I might be able to come to some of the issues you were raising, which we're already paying for. The group that gathers in front of the library, because I direct the program at the Homeless Services of the Red Cross, so we run the Friendship Center. Most of these young people that come, their problems are complex, but housing is the number one. They stay in places, the slum landlords and everything, where there's basically no living room. So they come out, they're coming to probation, to parole, and we are their living room. But because they have such a short attention span, they can't sit still. So they're in the library. You're wondering why they don't go to the outfitters. And they have to be in that space where there is a constant level of chaos, where they don't have to do anything orderly. Nobody can tell them what to do. They're smoking. They are doing all spitting. And it's disgusting. We can toss them out of the friendships and if they start using a language, but outside of a library, there's not much to security men can do. But there are a few things that, looking at it and the housing structure of our county, there are many things we can do. When they come on Wednesday to see the parole officer, some of them who live in Groton and who live in Enfield, the T-card bus service, if there's a way to increase the frequency between 2 and certain period, it may take them back home. But I just know that where they are going to is a hellhole. I've been to some of those places you cannot, and none of us here can mandate the Department of Social Services not to pay for people staying in these places that look like wardrobes, because that's basically where they are. So that's why they're in town, you know, with all the substance abuse issues, which in the federal government came up with this program called, you know, it was to address homelessness, and they wanted to end it in 10 years. But one of the things that they first settled on was that put them in a safe, secure housing and then provide the services. We don't have the money to do that. There are no secure, functioning housing units for these people. And so the library now becomes the living room, because they can go in and out. They don't have to stay for any length of time. So as the legislature thinks about all this, maybe we can get T-card between the hours of 4. I know people who have to card. There was a gentleman who helped me at the Friendship Center today. We close at 4:30. His bus that would get him to his place was coming at 6:45. So if he got a bus that either took him at 5:15, and that he will not have to stay that length of time. So those are some of the issues which I don't think we had time to share all of them, but it's part of this complex issues we are having with the young people. And I think in England, they say not educated, not in school. They find a term for them, and they are already sapping the energy of the county in probation, in schools, and you know the tutors we have to have here. So anyway, that's part of just my...
Well, in addition to services, which I think that answers, I was thinking more in terms of while we change the image of the library as a place to come, and I don't know what you're implicating, that you do your drug deal or whatever, is there something that we can temporarily allocate to see in terms of city private security, police, and sheriff?
Let me interrupt. Yes. We are not going to do that this evening. The reason I asked this question way back at the beginning of this was to shine a light on some of the issues that you have. I've heard a couple good suggestions, but my sense is that we really need a group of people need to sit in a room and make some determinations on what direction we should go. I have Will and then Frank.
Thank you, Jim. And thank you very much for this really good presentation. Remind us again about the, you told that the town was putting in the money for extra hours and the city based it on sales tax. Remind us again what the city's level of support is and how that works.
The funds we receive from the city are via sales tax. It is usually between $13,000 and $14,000 a year. And the town gives us $20,000 each year, and we put that directly towards Sundays.
The town actually has been giving you more than the city, apparently. Is
yes.
That? Okay. And secondly, I was concerned to see the number of our collection going down.
Yes.
I understand that it's completely generated by donations through the Friends efforts. Are we approaching a point where we're not going to have the resources to actually have a collection that is worthy of that space in this community, or are we still do we have ways to go there? I mean, is it?
I mean, 15,000 new items. I don't think that's very much for the kind of library. It was 9% less than in 2012. We had 9% less than 2011. I know 2011 was less than the year before. So I don't think it's going to happen in this year or next year, but I do worry about the sustainability of that. There is a, I know there's a belief that when Ezra Cornell founded the library that he endowed the collection. He did not. So it is of concern.
Thank you.
Frank, and then Mike.
Susan, Will just reminded me of something. When we had the Library Studies Committee a number of years ago, I chaired two or three different committees on that. Mike Lane was also chair of a couple of them. My recollection is the collections were costing in excess of $50,000. So we've come a long way down from the years where we, regardless of who was funding them, we had more of our resources to, were providing more resources either through the Friends or a combination of the Friends and the county. Anyway, that was a statement. And Jim will jump on me because I didn't phrase it as a question. My question is, there are four rural libraries in towns that have some manner, shape, or form of additional funding. There are what used to be the two reading rooms in Danby and Caroline, and then there's the newest library that's a standalone now in Lansing. When we established the early days of Lansing, but certainly Danby and Caroline, the library was quite involved in those, and not just indirect funding in a lot of regards, but support.
Yes.
Can you say what kind of support are you giving those three entities now? And the Finger Lakes Library System was involved in lending some support to all the other four libraries too. Can you just bring us up to speed?
Sure. The reading rooms we still support, Caroline and Danby, and we work with them for materials that they come to the library and select the materials that are actually taken to the reading room for the patrons to use there. And then they can work with the librarians on reference and research questions that they might have. We have people who come to do local history research for their reading rooms to take back. So there's quite a lot of support. And we have done programs there in terms of book groups and things. And we're talking about how we could do more. But there's been quite a bit of support. The other county libraries, I think I mentioned when I talked earlier that the number of materials that we send out over the course of the year is close to 500,000 from our collection that they use, that goes through the Finger Lakes Library System, delivers those materials. So it is complicated in some ways because the Finger Lakes Library System covers five counties, 33 libraries. So we're the central library for that. So we're serving all of those libraries. But that 500,000 that I talked about, the materials going, was just to our county chartered libraries, Groton, Danby, Lansing, Dryden, and Trumansburg. Mm-hmm.
Is the Gates Foundation a potential resource for additional funding?
The Gates Foundation, I believe the library did have a grant from them in the past. We look at every foundation possible for grants. So I think we've gotten a lot of grants. I mean, that is one of the ways that we are able to provide programs. So, for example, the summer reading program that we have is all with grants that we've obtained. So that is certainly a source of funding that we look at.
Thank you.
I have Mike and Dooley.
Susan, we have a lot of supporters here tonight. I wonder if you might introduce them. I was glad that Aloysia introduced himself as the this year's chair of the library's board of trustees.
Yes, I am very grateful. I think everyone in the audience is here from the library. So we have Aloysia Iarrelli, who's our board president. We have Bruce Ryan, who's the board vice president. We have Cindy Nicholson, who is our board treasurer. We have Tracy Matrano, who is a trustee. We have Don Trotter, who is the president of the Friends, and Rosie Rice, who is the assistant director. I'm very fortunate to work with an amazing board, I have to say. And the Friends have been incredibly generous and supportive of the library. Thank you for allowing me to do that. Thank you for asking.
Abdulli.
Are you getting a large number of questions about the Health Care Act?
Yes. We have always gotten a lot of questions about how do I apply for Medicaid? How do I go online to get? We actually had someone bring in an MRI and ask how to read it. We can't offer any legal advice or medical advice, so we had to get the right person. But that is something that libraries have always done, is served as an information hub to get people to the right place. But with the Affordable Care Act, those technology skills and being able to sign up for, you know, to find the website, you need an email address. When we had Betty Falco was great. She came and did a presentation for us, and we identified what are the technological needs that people will have when they come in to ask us. So she was working with us, and one of the things we identified early on is people need an email address. And if you don't have a computer, then the library is really essential for that, because you can create an email address and use the library computers. We get a lot of questions about health care.
I do remember there used to be shelves with health information,
yep,
and a staff person specializing in that, and that's been gone for a while.
Yes.
So, and that made me think of something that wasn't handed out to us this year, but I've seen in the past, and that is the way the number of staff have varied over the years, and I'm sure you have that piece of paper somewhere.
I think I had a slide. There we go. This is the staff position.
But it doesn't break it down.
Oh, where they are.
Saying, you know, how many did what levels of service,
mm-hmm,
some youth librarians, whatever. And if that's easily available, not tonight, but I would appreciate, mm-hmm, seeing that again.
I will tell you that where I had it, as we have responded to cuts when we've had the staff vacancies, when we haven't filled the positions, most of those vacancies have occurred in the librarian positions. That's of great concern, because the New York State Education Law requires certified public librarians with an MLS, and public librarians, after having been in academia for many years, public librarians have a very different and incredible expertise in terms of collection development and response to the community. So thank you for asking. I'd be happy to send that to you. That is one of my greatest concerns, is that we may have 41.8 staff, but we don't have enough certified librarians.
I guess
I will send that to you.
Thank you. I understand that some of my colleagues are worried about, can we keep up our support? And I worry about how much more we actually can do, rather than should we be cutting. So I need to have that understanding. Thanks very much, Susan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Susan, and also much gratitude to people on either side of the room for coming down here and showing support to the library. I know you will all work very hard at this. And Susan, the only thing I can promise you, that the discussion that was started early on will continue, and the county and city and others will get together and try to solve that problem.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. I appreciate the questions and all the work that you do very much. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. We're back here Thursday with the DA, the highway, the sheriff's office, road and jail, WIB, workforce, youth services, and Youth Services Rec Partnership. And thank you all for coming.